So there is this trend. I don't know if you've seen it.
Oh, God.
And at this point, I don't even know if it's a trend anymore because fucking TikTok trends move at the speed of fucking light these days.
Yeah.
But the reason why I'm bringing it up is because it's very relevant to our podcast, shockingly. So there is or was this trend going around where it was like gender non-binary people were posting TikToks about how you know, just because you dress femme or just because you dress like you know, masculine doesn't mean that that's what you are and you can do whatever. Sure. And they were showing their fits, both like femme and mask.
Yeah.
And showing that like you can just do both. And they were set to New Perspective.
Oh, that's cool.
And that was the sound that they used was New Perspective. And so that's why I brought it up. But I tell you what, the fucking bisexual, pansexual panic that I was feeling watching some of those TikToks insane. Some of, like, it's just like, whoa.
Yeah.
All right. Get you someone who could do both. yeah. No, it was pretty cool. I'll try and put a link to one of my favorite ones in the show notes. But
yeah.
The fact that I was just like, oh, hey, it's Panic at the hello. Yeah,
that's good stuff. The only TikTok trend that I'm aware of is the royal family. That's all I know anymore.
Yeah, I don't know. Well, so obviously the Kate Middleton stuff,
yeah,
is going on, and we can talk about that here in a second. The thing that who the fuck knows when what's going to be happening by the time this episode comes out, but we are talking about it in the present tense because it was just, not to put a date on the episode, but it was just recently St. Patrick's Day, like 2 days ago. And
not to put a date on it or anything.
Yeah, not to put a date on it, but let's put a very extremely specific date on it. But as you know, St. Patrick's Day is a holiday. I'm pretty sure a holiday that was created for Irish Americans. I don't think it's a native Irish holiday.
No, it was made specifically for the river in Chicago. Yeah,
yeah. They can dye all those. They can scare all those fish.
Mm-hmm.
It was this weekend that the Royal Palace gave BBC some type of information, some type of announcement that they were unwilling to release on St. Patrick's Day. Because as you know, the Irish and the British have always been very kind to each other.
Yeah, very much.
They've never had any conflict whatsoever.
Never.
And so they wouldn't want to ruin the Irish day. They would never want to do that. And so they were holding it. They were holding it back. But like, people were speculating that King Charles died because he's been on the way out for a couple weeks now. And it was like the feed was filled with just like people just going, like, the Charles in a box, because people don't like the royal family.
They
really
crazy.
Don't like Charles.
No.
Yeah. But yeah, so this is all, but I don't know if that's real or not, but I imagine that's going to be an announcement that'll be coming any day now, because I'm pretty sure he has like cancer.
Sure. I'm pretty sure.
Like,
I think he's
Okay. No, I think he's like on the way out regardless, but yeah. Then you got Kate Middleton, who is missing.
Yeah, or not, you know, kind of like Bigfoot out there just getting photos taken.
Getting photoshopped photos taken.
Yeah.
Like, they had that picture of her with the kids that was very obviously like tweaked in various ways. And
sure.
You know.
Then I think I saw a video of her and, you know, the Prince William walking, and it's like, that does not look whatsoever.
Yeah, looks like a clip that like Conan O'Brien would have edited when he was doing this like late night.
Yeah.
Like one of those like weird juxtaposed clips of celebrities that he would do.
For all we know, it is Conan O'Brien in that video.
Could be. Listen, Who can say? Is it Conan O'Brien? Is it Kate Middleton? it's the same. HR would like you to find the difference between these pictures. It's the same picture.
I feel like one way or another, we wrapped back around to the Irish. Here we go again. I'm glad I can get this all out in the pre-roll that I can't fucking talk today either.
But here's the thing. Here's the problem with that assessment is that you're also not going to be able to talk in the episode either. So that's fair. Not like you're getting it. Like you're not getting anything out. It's just happening. I did see one person speculate that the public has not seen Kate Middleton really since Christmas, December 25th, 2023. And the public has also, at that point, not seen Pete Davidson since December 29th, 2023. So there was speculation that he bagged him another one.
You know, that'd be a good one for him to get, but...
Yeah, old Big Dick Pete. But again, this is 2 days after St. Patrick's Day, so that this might be moot by the time we get to it, by the time it comes out. And if we, I don't apologize.
No,
let's make that very clear. I don't apologize.
And if you don't hear this episode, we know that the royal family truly fucked up and the world has ended.
Right. Yeah. Well, I think, I do appreciate attributing whatever might happen to in the world to the royal family.
It sounds right.
It does. It does, right? Like, it sounds like, yeah, that tracks.
Yeah. Like, it's either like, us or them.
Right. Like, well, because here's the thing. It's just like, there is a number of things that could happen that would trigger the end of the world, right? And I'm sure, like, I have, like, a li- like, I would, I don't have, a, I should say, I don't have a list of things that wouldn't surprise me, like, the, like, from would to wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah.
But if I had to, like, if I had to put the royal family somewhere on that list, it would trend really more towards the, no, that doesn't surprise me side of the list.
Right.
Right. Like, a singular German Shepherd in fucking Nebraska.
Flaps like that his wings, is yeah. on the
right. That is like on the end of the spectrum where I'm just like, oh yeah, that's weird. I wouldn't have bet on that. But the royal family, yeah, that's high on my list. So
I don't know. This podcast known loathing of Nebraska probably would say that it wouldn't surprise us whatsoever.
Well, I think the surprising thing is less the surprising thing is less Nebraska and more the German Shepherd.
German Shepherd,
I just pulled a random state out of my ass. Which Nebraska is ass. So that's apropos.
I love this. I love all of this.
The Nebraska slander.
Nebraska slander. As
if you live in Nebraska, get fucked.
Yeah. From a Kansas. Go play with your corn with the children.
Go play with your corn.
Yes.
Hello, friends. Wow. I feel like a ghost. I feel like a medieval ghost here. Hello, friends. Good. Thank you for joining us today on Adam and Sam at the Disco. Come on in. Take a seat. Get ready. Because it is season premiere time. Bet you thought it would never happen. Who would have thought? Not me. Not me. But we're here. We made it to season 5 of Adam and Sam at the Disco. Don't forget to close the goddamn door. I, against all odds, am Sam.
And I am Adam.
Wow. And aggressive
today. We're in season fucking 5.
Season fucking 5.
It's so fucking weird. It's crazy.
It's so fucking weird. We made it to season 5. This is season 5 out of a potential 7.
Yes.
With many stops in between.
So. Yeah, I think that's really what's taken it so fucking long. Like, season 4.5 was a lot longer than, you know, the midseason after fucking Vices. My God.
Yeah.
Oh, we had a lot going on. We had leak songs. We had bonus tracks.
Yeah. We had a lot of stuff going on. And we have more bonus tracks More bonus tracks and more feature tracks to talk about as we go. So that's going to happen. We've got live albums to talk about. So that's going to happen. We've got more leaked secret tracks to talk about in the future as well. So like it's all fucking happening. So, but we are here right now, season 5. And I did want to take a moment to actually legit get serious. Oops, sorry, I almost knocked my can over. To legit get serious, because this is the first episode that we have recorded since we had to take that week break. Yep. Everybody saw that announcement if they listen. I just wanted to take a quick second to say I did see everybody's messages. And I am very, very appreciative. I didn't think anybody was going to have a problem with that in the first place. But I very much appreciate everybody's kindness and I appreciate everybody's understanding. I'm still not doing perfect, obviously, given everything, but I'm doing better. And that is, that's all we could really hope for. So thank you. I don't want to linger on that for too long. So I'm going to move on, but I didn't want to let it slip by without, you know, acknowledging and thanking everybody for their kindness. So there's that.
Yeah, much appreciated.
Fart.
Yeah, well, you can be nice, and I'll be the guy that says if anybody would have had any negative words to say about this, I would have quickly came in and said fuck you. So
yeah,
thank you all for being very understanding.
Yes, absolutely. But also that does lead me to the fact that we do have some things to talk about. We have some stuff that people were commenting on in the meantime. So the first one I want to get to is Aaron Heuel on $20 Nosebleed.
Yeah.
So I love Folie à Deux the way I love Pretty Odd. I've been doing the Pretty Odd ranking for months, lads. It's coming, but spoiler, my favorite is She Had the World, close second, Northern Downpour, 9 in the Afternoon, last or second last. Which begs the question, if it is second last, what would then be last?
That is interesting. I feel like that ranking of 9 in the Afternoon is closer to mine.
Yeah,
I know it didn't sit high and pretty for mine.
No, which I respect. Again, I think we talked about this in the episode. It's been a while. Yeah. But I respect that. I get it. You know, I get it. I just like, I don't know. I vibe with it.
Sure.
She Had the World is not one that I would necessarily put at the top of my list, but that's interesting. I like that. I don't know. It's a dark horse. I appreciate dark horses.
You know? Yeah, it's pretty good there at the top. It's I mean, good there at the top. Obviously it wasn't ours, but.
Do you want this opportunity to talk shit?
No, I was just glad to see Aaron had returned to us after so long, after so many episodes. Yes.
It's been a bit. Yeah. It's like when the new season premieres and then they bring back like all the cast that had left and surprise you with like shocking twists and debuts and returns.
Yeah, that she'll, you know, end up saying that it was Heuel all along. That will be the twist there for us.
No. It's like it was Agatha all along. So it was Heuel all along.
Yeah, yeah. Hopefully there's no Disney Plus show for that, but no offense, Aaron. Fourth favorite listener. Welcome back.
on our favorite song, Keep On Keeping On, Dennis Wakeman. Said, I bet this song would do really well remixed with New York State of Mind since it completely rips its piano. Uh-oh. Stinky.
Coming in, Dennis. I would go one better and say this song would sound better if it just was never made at all, but it's 9-7 writers, how many fucking ever there were, which will be a good controversial topic for the rest of this fucking album.
We got a couple more. We have to go back in time for this one because Caitlin Taylor, who has written into the show before, went back and commented on some of our ranking episodes. And of course, if we go back to the ranking for A Fever You Can't Sweat Out, Caitlin says, Justice for Time to Dance.
Yep.
And what I would say to that is no. How about that?
I truly love this. Like, this feels like the Smash Brothers of the comment section for our podcast. We're all here.
Gang's all here. We've also got a few. Caitlin has also commented on the ranking of Pretty Odd. The opinions have shifted in our favor on this one. I would have passed away if Northern Downpour was not number one. Same.
Yeah.
At least for me. I know we had some people that disagreed with that. And that is, you know...
Actually, they're wrong.
I wouldn't say fine, but it is an opinion that you are allowed to have.
A highly disagreeable one.
Yeah. And then we have the overview for two, or the ranking of...
Too weird,
yes, which I clicked on the overview, which fucked me up. Which, where is it? It's here. It was here just...
Oh, I've got the comment up if you want it.
Well, I feel like I've read all of them, and I feel like I have to read. Here we go. Caitlin again, catching up on the pod, and only recently realized I got a shout-out for defending trade mistakes. Trades mistakes.
Trades mistakes.
But I'm back to defend Vegas Lights. I've probably replayed that one the most in recent years with a crying face emoji. Yeah.
I'd cry too if I listened to Vegas Lights the most.
Yo! That's rude as hell, dude. You're such a rude, crude dude, and I don't think people can handle your twisted sense of humor.
They keep coming back.
They do keep coming back against all odds.
I think it's for you, though. I've already resigned myself to they come for the Sam, not the Adam.
I mean, your name is first. They come to vote you dumbest, typically.
That's right. That's the benefit of being first.
And they stay for the fucking pristine, organized brain that is me, which... That's a dangerous statement. I do not remember what the last we have, because we haven't talked about it in a couple episodes, like what the last like vote we talked about. So I'm going to start with Stuck in the Middle. That's a closed poll. Actually, the first, that's a closed poll, is Stuck in the Middle. Adam got two votes on that one, 100%. Stuck in the Middle, we got Lullaby, three votes, one for me, two for Adam. So that was 33 and a turd versus 66.7. We've got $20 nosebleed. There is, as of recording, 5 hours left to vote on this poll. You probably will not get an opportunity. That's also two for Adam, one for me. 33 and a turd versus 66.7.
I feel like you're tapping into your Irish coming off of a
Day. we're talking about you know I do have some Irish in me. Keep on keeping on, Adam. You got two. That's all that's happening.
I believe now, after the statement that I made in that you two that voted for me do like that song. And that's emotionally devastating for me much more than getting these
big
votes.
Big time emotional damage on that. I am interested in hearing some opinions on specifically Keep On Keeping On if you disagree with our assessment. Dennis, I will need to like re-listen to hear that New York State of Mind thing. I don't doubt it, and it starts a very troubling association with Brendan Urie and aping
flat ass
fart ripping tracks,
face deep in plagiarism.
We obviously don't have. Any poll on the little special announcement. I thank you for the comments on that one. I won't read them out here to spare myself. But yeah, that's it. We just put out Love in the Middle of a Firefight today as we're recording, so we don't have anything on that yet. But we will likely revisit that very soon. So thank you, everybody, for your comments and your quotations and your questionable opinions about things. Yeah. All good. I did want to take a second to point something out, because I think we have a lot of listeners that listen on Spotify, and I don't know how Spotify does it, because I fucking hate Spotify and its UI and everything like that. And good on you if you can handle it, but I cannot. It does not do well for my brain. Apple Podcasts, where I listen to podcasts typically, just introduced a generative like caption.
Oh god.
Yes. Transcript, automatically generated transcript feature. And so you can look at the transcript on the page before you play the episode, but it works like the lyrics do when you're listening to a song when you listen to the episode, and it'll like kind of carry you through the words of the like the words that we're saying, and you can actually search the transcript for specific words. So so Annie, if you're like, I need to make sure that there are no utterances of nipple in this episode, and you want to switch over to Apple Podcasts and you're able to do that, you can do that. You can search for the word nipple to make sure we don't talk about how daddy's how hard daddy's nipples are. And it's not going to do you any good for this episode because you didn't know about it if you don't use Apple Podcasts. But you know that that's a shot across the bow to let people know that's a feature on Apple Podcasts. And if it is a feature in Spotify, awesome, because Spotify and things that aren't Apple typically have things like this way before Apple does, because that's just how it works.
I don't and believe so. I know that it is for music, but I don't believe it is for podcasts.
Yeah. Historically, typically, like things that are not Apple produced have features like this way before, like years before Apple does. Sure. So it wouldn't have surprised me if like this was a thing on Spotify, like in 2020 or something like that.
Right.
But either way, it's a fun little feature. I sent a screenshot of it to Adam and a little video clip of it to Adam.
It's pretty good.
A couple weeks ago, and his response was, "Oh God!" So, yeah, great stuff.
Terrifying for some people.
Very terrifying.
Speaking of things that you can do on Spotify and Apple,
we haven't done this in a while.
Well, we're sitting at 4.4 stars on Spotify at with 18 people that have voted. So. I assume that's probably one vote from every listener that's on Spotify. And I know that we're still sitting at like a good three votes strong at 5 stars on iTunes. So that's good.
Actually, we just got another one.
We just got another comment.
But we got another star. We have 4 5-star ratings on Apple Podcasts now. Still no comments though, so no additional comments. We still have the one that, we still have the ones that that are friends that we know in real life.
Well, and on Spotify alone, we have had going into season 5, 4,694 total plays.
Wow!
So, and. That's pretty good. I'm pretty all right with that. That's pretty fucking on.
That's pretty fucking on. 155 followers on Spotify, which like, whoa.
Yeah. Cool. That's fun.
That. Cool. Yeah.
How exciting.
We haven't looked at analytics in a while.
No.
In a while, I will say, we do have 13.9% of people listen to our podcast on Apple Podcasts. So 13.9% of people do know about that feature, the transcript feature. I do want to talk to really quickly the 6% of people that listen in the web browser. Is that like the Spotify web browser, or they just listen to something within a web browser and that's just what it is?
I wonder if that's because they don't have their own platform on here, Podcasters. So I'm wondering if that's, if you were to click the RSS feed, that Podcasters itself might be one of the first ones and you can listen there, I think.
Right. Okay. Gotcha.
But I also do enjoy the fact that, you know, 3%-ish of listeners are talking to their Amazon Alexa and having to say, please like play
Adam and Sam at the Disco.
That's fun for you.
Yeah. Here's something that I find very interesting. And I don't think it's necessarily like a shock, right? Because of the subject matter. But it's also like overwhelmingly not what I expect out of the projects that I have personally done in my life. 56.4% of our listenership is female, which is not a split that I'm typically used to.
Sure.
Yeah, that is wild to me. 38.2% split of them is male. 3.6 non-binary and a 1.8 not specified. So who can say there? But yeah, I was like, wow, that is not.
That's interesting. Yeah, I must not have looked at this in a long while. I guess for some reason, I don't know why, but females prefer Brendan Urie over Solid Snake.
No, I could not possibly. Not
statistically, sounds impossible. But I get it.
Yeah, statistically speaking. Well, I guess they did make Raiden and Metal Gear Solid 2 to appeal to the ladies because the ladies don't like how gruff Solid Snake is. But he's got that booty, so I don't.
You do.
I also the other thing that I wanted to see is like that 1.2% of listeners that in the 60 plus age range. I just want to talk to you and ask you one simple question, which is why?
Well, let me go a little farther. Which one of our parents is this?
Oh, did you tell your parents? I didn't tell my parents about it.
I mean, my dad knows, but I don't believe that my dad would listen.
Yeah. Also, my dad is not 60 plus. He's still in his 50s. He's in his late 50s, but he's still in his 50s. So he's it wouldn't be that, my dad.
He's part of that 45 to 59.
Yep, right in there. Also, I don't know if I don't know how to feel about the fact that we also have 3% of the listeners between the age of 0 and 17. I don't know how to feel about that.
No.
Is that your kids?
No, I know my kids aren't listening. They have to hear my dumb fuck voice talk more often than not anyway, so why subject yourself to that willingly for an hour-ish straight? Yeah, no, I wouldn't.
I ask myself that question all the time.
That sounds correct.
18 to 22 is our highest listener base. 23 to 27. No, 28 to 34 is second. 23 to 27 is third. 45 to 59 is fourth. And then 35 to 44 is fifth.
Very weird. Very fucking weird.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. I think we've had the talk before that it would make sense that people around our age listen to this. You know, save for the 1% of 60, you know, plus, but like we're doing this for, gosh, we're doing this for, how fucking stupid was that? We, you know, our listenership is our peers, essentially. Yeah. Like, and yeah. I think that's fun. And I think that might also be like what helps kind of the level of jackassery that this podcast can abide by. Like,
sure.
All of this is all, we're not telling Gen Z jokes or, you know, we're not talking Gen Alpha. We're not saying shit like skibbity toilet Riz on here. I think we're as modern as we were probably 10 years ago.
What did you just
call
me?
Don't expect me to fucking define what skibbity toilet is.
This is not a Panic at the Disco podcast anymore. This podcast is exclusively for you to explain to me what the fuck skibbity toilet is, because I have heard it. I do not have the strength to figure it out.
I don't have
kids, so I don't have kids that like would know.
Thankfully, it's just
what
one.
It is
apparently.
It's
a TikTok joke that people have just said, but I guess what it's based off of is a YouTube channel where a dude's head was just out of a toilet, and that was kind of the basis of the guy's comedy. So take with that what you will, because I also have done no further research, and I shan't.
I'm gonna, this is probably a stupid question because I know the answer, but I'm gonna ask it anyway. Which one of your kids knows what skibbity toilet is?
Of course it is Gabe.
It is the beleaguered male child.
Of course, yes. This would just fit the bill here, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
I love it.
Here's something I would like to ask. And if this is a bad idea to you, I will just cut this part out of the podcast. Could we get Gabe in the room for a second to try and explain skibbity toilet?
Oh, if I felt that he truly could better than I just did, I totally would.
Okay.
But I think it's just one of those dumb fucking things through cultural osmosis middle school that you started non-ironically saying it one day and now it's your whole personality.
Yeah, I understand that. I'm with that. That's happened to me. I'm going to open up an incognito tab. And I'm going to open up YouTube in the incognito tab. And then I'm going to search for a skibbity toilet. And this is really, really hateful for me because the incognito tab has given me full light mode YouTube.
Ooh.
And also ads. So let's see. Skibbity toilet, multiverse, 029, full episode plus secret scene.
Oh, hell yeah.
Sounds like this too much. Skibbity toilet, 71.
71.
Yeah. I'm watching a Land Rover USA commercial.
Fantastic.
This is so good.
I love this.
Full Sail University branded Land Rover I'm looking at right now.
Excellent.
There's a Skibbity Toilet season 23.
Hell yeah.
All episode.
Ooh.
I don't know. I can't do this. This is too much. Okay, never mind. I don't care anymore. I don't care. This is too much stimulation. Can we talk about what?
Why are we here today?
Why are we here? Just to suffer? No. I mean, maybe, but also not intentionally. No, not intentionally, but maybe.
We're going to
secretly. Suffer. As we mentioned at the beginning of the episode, it is season 5.
Season fucking 5.
Adam and Sam at the Disco, which means that we have another overview episode to talk about. And do you want to know a thing?
Maybe. It depends.
What?
What? What?
Death of a Bachelor
is
the fifth 1, 2, 3, 4 fifth
motherfucking
studio album, motherfucking fifth studio album by Panic at the Disco, and first as a solo project for Brendan Urie, released on January 5th 2016. That was 10 days after my, this is embarrassing because I don't remember how old I was in 2016.
Ants, man.
It was eight years ago, which means that was 10 days after my 24th birthday. What the fuck? Nice. Released on January 15th, 2016 on Fueled by Ramen and DCD2. It is the follow-up to the band's fourth studio album, Too Weird to Live, Too Rare to Die, with the entire album written and recorded by vocalist / multi-instrumentalist Brendan Urie, who collaborated with other writers including Jake Sinclair, Morgan Kibbe, don't know who that is, Lolo, and Sam Hollander. It is the band's first album to not feature drummer Spencer Smith and also follows bassist Dallin Weeks' Get Down On Us departure from the official lineup, subsequently becoming a touring member once again. So, we talked about this last episode. So, he was still touring during this cycle and left that in 2017, but he was not creatively driving any of the album.
Right.
This time around. Okay. That is good and clear. And now I'm glad that we handled that. We're going to get to this next paragraph that I know you're looking at, Adam, here in a little bit when we read the lineup of things. but it was the paragraph I'm talking about is talking about the rankings, like where it peaked on the charts, and its sales and stuff like that. And we have a specific special section that we do for those things. So we're not going to talk about that right now.
Not yet.
Spoiler, as you know, as we know, as we've alluded to and very directly talked about for a year and a half now, there is a point, and this album is the start of it, where Brendan trends in a very specific direction as far as how his music is presented. And I think the reason is because of how this album did.
Yes. Very much so. This is a reason why.
There's a reason why this is the vibe it followed along the tracks. And here we are. So.
Oh, well, yeah, we'll get to it because there's I've got thoughts on why as well that have a very distinct difference from where we came from.
Mm-hmm. This album has, released January 15th, 2016, recorded April 2015, studio, Urielectric Studios. His personal studio is called Urielectric Studios, which I think is the dumbest, most pretentious thing I've ever read in my life.
But does it surprise you?
No, it doesn't surprise me. Also, supremely short album. 36 minutes, 6 seconds.
Yeah.
Very short album. Okay, calm down. First of all, calm down. This is why I think we're going to fight about this album, because you have like a very antagonistic view of this album. I do not.
There are songs. And I think the songs that I will be antagonistic about may be surprising.
Here's what I'm going to say, right? There are 11 songs on this album, right? And I'm just going to plant my flag in the sand right now and say a vast majority of those songs are good songs.
I would say, I'd say 7 to 8 of those songs I really like.
7 to 8.
Definitely not gonna fucking say 9.
I am super interested to know, because I'm looking at this list and I'm gonna be really, really, really honest here. This album for me is a very hard album to rank, because I legitimately think that all 11 of these tracks are very good. There are some that I like better than others, but I do like all 11 of these songs. Obviously, some are maybe overplayed in certain aspects. We knew that. I truly like this album overall.
Sure.
What do you think about this album? I like it. It's a good album.
Yeah. I like the album truly, but there are songs on here that I just don't ever want to fucking listen to.
Okay. And like, we'll get to those, obviously. We'll talk more specifics as the weeks go on. Yeah. I just think, I'm looking at this, and it's just, like, it's kind of, like, too weird, where it's just, like, there are songs on here that I wouldn't listen to independently.
Sure.
But I do love them in the context of the album. Right? Yeah. And, I just think it vibes. I also would like to present this to you. And I could be off base. I could be completely wrong. And I'm open to admitting that. But I want to think about this, how much of your, angst about this album comes from knowing where Brendan goes after it and knowing this was the start of it versus just taking the album at face value?
Oh, no. A lot of this really does come with face value. Like, there are songs on here. There are songs on here that I found grading at first that I have turned back on, and there are songs on here that I just truly did not like and probably never will. And then of course there is,
I'm so curious about what,
oh, I know, because it'll be
songs are,
it'll be interesting once we get into them. And then of course, like, and I don't think either of us are have held our hand on this one. Like, there's obviously a black sheep on this album that does have that notion of this is where we went.
Yeah. We've talked about it. Like, we can just say it. Yeah. It's Emperor's New Clothes. We've talked about it.
Yeah.
There is a very specific part of Emperor's New Clothes where Brendan fucking loses his goddamn mind. And that's the Brendan we get going forward.
Right.
Like, that's, like, we can just say it. I think it's okay to say it now that we are in the season. And we'll talk about that, because here's the thing. I genuinely like Emperor's New Clothes as a song.
Yeah.
I think it's got isolated cool
themes. Yeah.
Yeah, it's got cool themes. The music video is pretty sick. It's a little corny, but it's pretty cool.
Right.
But I think that, like, in isolation, the part that we're talking about is fine. It's just like a, whoa, Brendan, whoa, what the hell, yeah, in isolation. But then it's just two more albums of that.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah. So that's kind of like the pin we could put in, like where things kind of went after that.
This will be truly, truly interesting to rank because I don't think that we'll repeat season's four rankings, you know, the ones that we've matched on. I don't think that we'll maybe ever do that again as closely.
I already know, based on some stuff that we have said both privately and on the podcast, and it's not stuff that you would immediately be able to pinpoint and be like, oh, that's what they mean.
Right.
So it's not really as obvious as us like telegraphing fucking
This is gospel
the entire season.
Yeah.
But there have been some things in the last several months on this podcast and both talking to each other that makes me know that our number ones are going to be different.
Right.
And I know a lot of the songs that we're going to talk about are going to be different. So I do think there's going to be a lot of like variance here. So I'm very much looking forward to it. It is unfortunate that we do have to outlaw edging. But you know, sometimes you just have to do that to, you know, survive. You gotta release sometimes, and that's okay. And then obviously we'll also talk about the sort of other elephant in the room, which is Victorious.
Yes.
Holy shit.
Very much so.
That song was everywhere. That song was in every single sports montage you could possibly think of. That song was, I was listening to that song as a fucking Buffalo Wild Wings. Like that song was fucking everywhere.
I mean, I
and
think
obviously
it still is, sadly.
Yeah, like, it is still people are still using it in sports stuff. Like it's still around. Like that's like I don't know. And we'll obviously talk about it like as time goes on. Like actually I'm really curious, now that I'm thinking about it, because like is that like the most, it's either Victorious or High Hopes, right? Like Brennan's like most popular song. Like as a solo artist.
Yeah, I'll go to this Twitter page that I love to use every now and then for the podcast. Give me one moment, please.
So Victorious on YouTube, the music video has 81 million views.
Oh God, I would imagine that High Hopes tops that.
Oh, High Hopes has 771 million views. Okay. So I think High Hopes is probably his most popular song at this point. But
those are the real sinners.
Those are the real sinners. Yeah, I Write Sins has 400 million, so it's like several hundred million below,
sure,
High Hopes. So yeah, so I think Victorious was like, he was riding high on Victorious for a time, but it was still like not as popular as Sins. So regardless, yeah, it was overplayed. It still is kind of overplayed, but
very much so.
We can have our opinions on that.
Well, all right, here we go. Just to even ignore Victorious, because there's another song on this album that got really popular in the last couple of years from TikTok. Because that's where you've got House of Memories.
Oh, yeah. Holy shit. That was a really big sound for a while, wasn't it?
Yeah. So looking, Spotify rankings, I'm not going to say numbers because I will break my brain if I have to. High Hopes. I'll even abbreviate it. High Hopes is at number one with 1.5 billion streams.
Whoa.
I Write Sins Not Tragedies is 852 million. And then House of Memories is 697 million with Death of a Bachelor. Death of a Bachelor is number four, what, 413.
I would not have expected that. Like,
no, because then This Is Gospel is number five and Emperor's New Clothes is number six. So that's very fucking interesting.
Okay.
Victorious is on this list at number nine. Don't Threaten Me With a Good Time is on this list at number eight. L.A. Devotee at number 10. I didn't mean to go like off the rails numerically, but I was just like finding more as I went. So like
Whiplash, my guy.
I know. Oh. There is just a lot more on this list that I would have thought of. That's wild. Apparently this is a very popular album, more so than more so than Pray for the Wicked or fucking Viva Las Vengeance, I guess.
Well, pop stands for pop music, which is one of the genres this album is, as well as pop rock, rock, jazz, alternative rock, power pop, and R&B, which I always think it's hilarious when Panic at the Disco albums are listed as R&B records. That's always so funny to me. Like, the influence is there, but I wouldn't necessarily say this is R&B. Yeah, this is R&B.
Yeah, no, that's not... where? What? How?
Yeah. There are also four singles on this album, which I think means we have four music videos to talk about later in the season. Hallelujah, released on April 20th, 420. Haha, nice.
Nice.
April 20th, 2015. Victorious, released on September 29th, 2015.
Not nice.
Not nice. Emperor's New Clothes, released on October 21st, 2015. Kinda nice. Death of a Bachelor, released on December 9th, 2015.
Pretty nice. I think it was nice to give us all... Let's continue the trend of being nice. The trend of letting us know the downfall was coming before the album actually came out was...
Sure.
Probably good. Probably kind of him. I don't know.
Sure. Sure, sure, sure. But yeah, so all of those tracks came out right before, because it came out in January 2016. So it was rip raring to go in January with those four singles. Yeah. In an interview with Entertainment Tonight, Brendon Urie stated that Death of a Bachelor was lyrically inspired by his wife, Sarah Urie, Sarah with an H, Urie, and his lifestyle, stating, his wife, this whole album was written in my house where she and the Urie Electric Studios at his home.
God damn it.
Where she and I live, and it reflects very much the lifestyle I was living while writing it, which is so different from who I used to be. In an interview with Alt 98.7 mid-2015, he had to say about the album, it's going to be a little bit different. It's the mix between Sinatra and Queen, if that makes any sense. Every time we do a new album, for me, it's always evolving and changing in the best way. There's going to be a new energy live.
You know, I don't ever want to be a guy that knocks down somebody's self-confidence.
Sure.
But this was maybe a little too self-indulgent of a sentence to say, I think.
But here, and here, here's
it's not like, it's not that I disagree with it. Like,
yeah,
there
yeah,
is
yeah.
that. But I feel like that in itself is reachy. Like,
sure.
I think you nail the Sinatra thing on one song. You nail the Queen thing on maybe one or two songs. Mm-hmm. And aside from that, I don't know where in between we are, but it does not feel like we're in between either of those.
Well, he definitely nails the Queen stuff later.
Definitely gets that later. And I mean, like, he gets, you know, I think Victorious being the beginning of the stadium rock, like, that doesn't mean to me that you nailed a Queen thing. Like, you
yeah.
could say that at the same time as I made a Scorpion song. Like, I made a fucking Foreigner song or something like that. Like, it just, I think Queen is an interesting one. And again, like, Sinatra at once. Like, you've got that maybe twice.
Yeah.
Maybe Death of a Bachelor and Impossible Year. Like, I guess if you got it twice. But I think if I had to now be the asshole that is going to put it in my head that Impossible Year is Brendon Urie's My Way, like, I fucking don't like that comparison at all.
Well, you think you're special. You do. That's my way.
Yes, that's the my, only
my way. My Way by Limp Bizkit is my Roman
Very
Empire.
Very much, yes. It's my way.
This time I'm going to let it all come out. This time I'm going to stand up and shout.
My Which, way by the way, or the highway.
Fans who love when we talk about wrestling, My Way by Limp Bizkit is the song that is heavily associated to what is considered the greatest wrestling promo of all time, like promo video of all time.
That's awesome.
WrestleMania 17, The Rock versus Stone Cold Steve Austin. The highlight video, like hyping it up, the hype package was set to My Way by Limp Bizkit. And it is perhaps one of the greatest wrestling hype packages of all time. There maybe have been some that are better over the years. I don't know, but it's solidly in the top three regardless. Anyway.
Hey, what's that? I mean, we can't let that go because also, what was the damn it, what was the first PlayStation 2 WWF game? Pull that out of your ass. Because that's was the it? One that had a Keep Rolling on it with Fred Durst in it. So, and I can tell you, well, I made a couple custom Roland, characters that had that.
Yeah, well, because Rolling was the song that The Undertaker came out to when he was the American Badass Biker.
Yep, the biker.
So Undertaker, Undertaker came out to a couple of different songs while he was a biker of undead biker character. He came out to Rollin' by Limp Bizkit. He came out to like a generic like rock song, and then the other one he came out to was American Badass by Kid Rock.
Oh, this is great.
Yeah. Also, another shock, one of the other best wrestling hype packages of all time was set to Monster by Imagine Dragons. Imagine that dragon. Anyway, I would like to stop talking about this.
Right?
And talk about how he began recording Death of a Bachelor in April of 2015 in a small studio, Yuri Electric Studios, built specifically for the album's, or that had been built, and a piano was bought specifically for the album's production. Production was handled by Jake Sinclair and Brendan Urie. Sinclair, who is a friend of Urie's, helped him view the music in different ways. Urie said he, quote, loved working in the studio, often running between that and the piano. He played every instrument minus the horns, which he also loved. His views had, quote, all changed from Too Weird to Live, Too Rare to Die, having different things he wanted to discuss. Interesting.
Such as
littering and he released a statement, Brendan Urie did, on October 22nd, 2015, through the band's Facebook page on the background of the album. He said, when I was a little kid and I heard a song I liked on TV, I would jump up and run to the piano to try and figure it out by ear. When I was 10 or 11, I built myself a drum kit in the garage made out of empty laundry detergent buckets, old lawn chairs, paint cans, and old trash cans. Around that time, my parents got me my first guitar, a baby acoustic. I jumped between all these instruments constantly to satisfy the ideas I heard in my head. At this young age, I realized that music would play a huge part in my life. I had no idea. Death of a Bachelor is in honor of those times I spent alone as a kid, allowing music to consume me, playing everything myself just to get the idea right and out of my head. It's a beginning to a new era, yeah, and an homage to how it all began. This album is me running to the piano, building a drum kit, strumming a guitar. Some things never change.
I think what's great about that is it seems like even his parents from a young age really wanted him to plagiarize other people's music.
Yeah.
And really just made sure that could happen. Like, that's great to have your parents' support when you're doing things that other artists would definitely not appreciate whatsoever. But, you know, good job, Mr. and Mrs. Urie, the original.
Do you want to read this quote from January 6, 2016, an interview with Mixdown Magazine, where he commented about Dan Levy's move from the official lineup?
I can do that. I say confidently. Dallin has been playing with us for a long time, and I'm so grateful for that. Sometimes you try working creatively with people, and it doesn't always work out the way you think it will. In this case, weird. In this case, it ended up just being better to have someone to tour with. It's an oversight sometimes, but you have to have people that you connect with and get along with. Interesting. Touring can be long, and it can be intense. You need people that will see you through that. Dallin has been that for me. That was a crispy pop during that.
Thank you. I hit it under my desk to try and minimize it, but that's not at work.
It did not work, but that is A-okay. Interesting here, knowing that Dallin seems to have maybe
the opposite opinion.
Yeah, probably harsher feelings about this whole experience for him as a creative and as an artist and as a performer through all of those.
Hundy P. Yeah, very interesting. On the day of the titular, I love the word titular.
Titular.
On the day of the titular track's premiere, Brendan Urie said on social media, Frank Sinatra turns 100 this year. I attach his music to so many memories, opening presents on Christmas Day, my grandparents teaching the rest of my family to swing dance, watching Who Framed Roger Rabbit with my siblings. Sinatra makes a cameo in the form of a cartoon sword singing witchcraft. His music has been a major player in the soundtrack of my life, so it's only right that I return the favor and or pay it forward. I wrote a new album this year, and even in the few songs that don't sound remotely similar to any of his music, I still felt his influence in the writing and the need to relate so personally to each song. Death of a Bachelor is very important to me. It expresses the bittersweet, but mostly sweet end of an era. A look back at part of my life now deceased. It's a wonderful life-esque look into a possibly different future, but mostly an appreciation for the present. So I guess that's what he means.
I could fuck with that.
I guess.
Yeah. Like, that seems... That seems like when you write a sentence in an essay and your teacher asks for clarification, you have to write a paragraph about it.
Yeah.
And that paragraph still needs added clarification. But, I mean, like, I guess, yeah, I understand that you worship, like, Sinatra, like a lot of artists did. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. I don't know, man. I don't feel like this is a Wonderful Life-esque look into, you know, a possibly different future whatsoever. I think this is the future. Like, I think maybe at the time he could have had that thought in his head, surely, but then fucking just saw the success of this and took off running with this. Like, I think this album would have been cool as just a little experimental thing, kind of like Too Weird felt, but 'twasn't. Mm-hmm. Because there's no segue for that from because actually.
Oh, okay.
Yuri.
All right.
Yuri also stated. Sometimes you just say words and things come out. Kind of like Brendan Yuri. Yuri also stated in an interview with Upset Magazine that he feels that the song is very jazzy, very Sinatra-esque, but then put it with this beat that sounds like Beyonce's Drunken Love. See, dude's just pulling shit out of a hat. The song is the song is also where Yuri got the album title from. Like, and I guess, like, just saying words is cool. But then, like, when people kind of like us with this podcast, and I know I sound like a fucking idiot most of the time, like, just saying words when it's going to be put in black and white or on a repetitive, like, to the masses thing, it has to have, like, something behind it. Like, you can't, like, I can't just say TikTok, dick shit, Who Framed Roger Rabbit, Rick and Morty, and expect people to understand what I mean. Like, I can't just reference things and have people say, yeah, I see the through line to that wholly and completely. Like, it doesn't seem like you can't pull Sinatra-esque and then just say it sounds like Drunken Love. Like, that's fucking weird. Because to me, it does not have that Drunken Love vibe to it, like, whatsoever.
No,
and I would think to many listeners, it probably doesn't. I don't want to project that feeling on people that listen to this podcast or Brendan Urie, period. But I feel like that's not the vibe of that song. And even seeing this line, like this written line before, like, I have never thought that about this song.
Yeah,
like I think the defining difference probably is Drunken Love feels like a fucking sexier song. Like, it feels like I guess sexier is probably gonna be the way to, like, to stick with, because it's got both of them in it, doesn't it? Like, it's Drunken Love has Beyonce and Jay-Z.
Yeah.
Like, it's kind of got this interaction between two people that love one another in probably not the most Christian household kind of ways. But, like, Death of a Bachelor is a dialogue with yourself. Like, and I think that's to say that it sounds like it, even in beat alone, like, is fucking batshit to me. It's batty.
Yeah. Here's one. Only one song was cut from this album, Nightbirds, described as a, quote, driving arena rocker with a flashy guitar solo. Yuri described the song as a little too early Butch Walker, but definitely not as good, in an interview with Alternative Press. And Adam, guess what?
I'd have taken it.
February 18th, 2024, Panic at the Breakup on YouTube. We have Nightbirds.
What the fuck?
One month ago, Nightbirds was published, was leaked on YouTube.
Oh my god. So,
looks like we're going to be talking about that.
Wow.
When the time comes. Yeah. So here's the thing. While you were reading that Drunken Love paragraph, I was kind of like looking ahead at the next one. And sure. I just went to YouTube to see. And guess what I found? So this is breaking. Like, I found this just fucking now.
Awesome.
And so we are going to be covering Nightbirds when the time comes. Again, since it's a leak track, we're not going to include it in the rankings, but we will talk about it after the ranking episode. So be aware of that. That is on YouTube, ready to chat about. And just in case, I just did a YouTube download rip just in case it gets removed. So we will be able to talk about it regardless.
Yes.
So.
Interesting.
Yeah, so we got Nightbirds. We talked about this. Hallelujah was released as the lead single on April 20th, 2015, and served service to alternative radio. A lyric video was uploaded on the same day, and the official music video premiered on 7th of July, 2015. Death of a Bachelor was premiered on Beats 1 on Apple Music by Pete Wentz. Ah, Peter.
Hey.
Ah, Peter Wentz.
Mr. Topspin himself.
Mr. Topspin himself. Oh, yeah. Pete Wentz, Topspin ambassador over here. Tennis boy.
Mm. Yeah, to continue that, Dylan Francis is the one that remixed fucking whatever song they put on there that I could have told you before I opened my fucking mouth.
Cool, dude. But yeah, he premiered that on Beats 1 on September 1st, 2015. Victorious, co-written and produced by CJ Barron, was released for digital download on September 29th, 2015 as the second single. Emperor's New Clothes and his music video were released for digital download on October 21st, 2015 as a third to coincide with the album's announcement. So those first two were released just apropos of nothing, and then Emperor's New Clothes was the, hey, this is actually an album announcement. Death of a Bachelor's official music video was released on December 24th, 2015, the day before Christmas. Feels like Christmas nearly every day. On December 31st, 2015, the band made Don't Threat Me with a Good Time available for streaming. On January 15th, 2016, the band premiered the rest of its tracks on its YouTube channel at the same time that the album was released. The band went on the Weezer and Panic at the Disco Summer Tour 2016 with Weezer to promote both of their new albums. On September 22nd, 2016, the official music video for LA Devotee was released on the band's YouTube channel to coincide with the announcement of the Death of a Bachelor tour, which was the tour I went to.
Heartbreak feels so good.
Yep.
That was the one. Found it.
For the follow-up. Okay.
Yep. I was thinking earlier, this is not the one that I went to. We went to the Pray for the Wicked one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I went to the Death of a Bachelor tour. I've got a really funny story about the Death of a Bachelor tour. So, and this is going to seem very weird. I think that I would consider myself a trustworthy non weird person in general, right?
Sure.
And I know that people who have to say that are not necessarily that, but I really, really need to preface this story with that statement. So Death of a Bachelor tour came out, and my friend Alicia, who I worked with at the time, apparently got tickets to the Death of a Bachelor tour, right? Two tickets for her and her little sister, who I believe at the time Jamie was 14 or 15, I think. I'm pretty sure, yeah, she was like 14 or 15. So she had gotten these two tickets, and the tickets were a gift to her younger sister. And I'm talking at work with Alicia one day, and Alicia goes, I really don't want to go to this concert. And I was like, what concert? And then she tells me about the tickets. I was like, oh, wow, why don't you want to go? Because she says, I don't really fuck with Panic at the Disco like that. And I got them for Jamie. And I was like, oh, gotcha. And I should clarify here. I had never met Jamie. I had never met her younger sister. And it was just this kind of like moment. And she's like just working, and I'm just like doing other stuff. I was like, oh, that sucks. I guess you'll probably have a good time, you know, when you go. And I didn't have money. I didn't have a lot of money at the time, so I wasn't going to be able to go. And it was the first like album tour that I would have missed, which was really bummer for me. But I was like, well, I mean, you know, it's concerts are infectious. Like, even if you don't necessarily dig the music, like the vibe will be good. And she's like, yeah, I guess. And so we're just like working. And then she goes, you like Panic at the Disco? And I was like, I do. And she goes, would you be willing to take my sister to this concert?
Oh, no.
I am a grown adult man. This is a fucking 14-year-old girl that I've never met in my fucking life. I didn't grow up with these people. I do not know this person. I'm just like, what the fuck are you asking me to do? This is very, very weird. I was like, I guess I think it's a little weird. She goes, no, you're cool. And I was like, all right. And so she goes to tell Jamie this idea, and Jamie's just like, rightfully, I don't know who this man is, this adult man is that you want me to go to this concert with. Fully get that. That's the right. That is a child who understands that people suck. You know what I mean? That like bad things happen and that bad people are bad inherently. And so she was just like, I will think about it, but I need to meet him first. And Jamie was like, yeah, cool. And so we went and got pizza all together. So it was me, Alicia, Jamie, and then Alicia's at the time, her boyfriend. And we all went to go get pizza together. And I guess the vibe was not off because Jamie was like, okay, I'll go. And then we went, and that was the first time I ever saw him play This Is Gospel with the piano pillar with the fucking...
Ooh.
Yeah, the raining confetti, and I cried, and it was great. And now me and Jamie are very close now.
Sure.
But I just thought, like, could you imagine not only being the child that is asked to have this strange man that you've never met before take you to a concert an hour away, like an hour and 15 minutes away from where you live, by the way. This is in Columbus, and we lived in Dayton. So we were like an hour and 15 minutes away from the venue. And so not only to have this be told, hey, I want this strange person you've never met, the strange man you've never met, to take you, a female teenage child to this concert an hour and some change away. But then to be the adult man that is asked to be put in that situation as well.
Yeah.
it's very weird. It is very strange, but it worked out. I got to see Panic at the Disco on that album tour. My streak was unbroken. What a fucking world. That's a fucking Seinfeld episode.
Yeah, that happened.
Like, yeah. Anyway, I just thought that.
Hey, Jerry, will you take my niece over here to the Boston concert?
The Boston concert. That was a really bad impression of a New Yorker. I should also clarify.
You're welcome.
Trying to do Kramer there?
No, I don't fucking know what I was aiming for, to be honest. So,
all right.
I don't think I wanted to be Seinfeld there. So,
yeah. What's the deal with taking underage girls to concerts?
Exactly.
If we want to talk about people who fuck with underage people, Gerald Seinfeld.
Oh man.
Oof.
That's no good.
Oof. Oof, Jerry. Yeah. Oof.
Yeah, you really had your own driving to concerts with comedians kind of right there. No, thanks. Well, that's cool that it was at least a good time, but yeah.
It worked out.
The wind-up sounds not the fun wildest, whatsoever.
The wildest pitch in the world.
Yeah.
Just the wildest pitch. But anyway. Death of a Bachelor.
Yeah, let's get into some reception
Let's talk about some reception. Received generally positive reviews from music critics. It holds an average score of 69.
Nice.
Out of 100, thank you. On Metacritic, indicating, quote, generally favorable reviews. In a positive review, the New York Times commented on the album's second single, Victorious, writing that Yuri evokes both the flamboyant swagger of Queen and the mechanized gleam of Daft Punk.
Oh, Jesus Christ. People just be saying things.
People just throwing words
out there.
People just forget that words have meaning, and they do mean things when you say them. Evan Lucy in Alternative Press, writing, for all of its precocious, borderline bratty moments. I love that, actually. Those are words that I do like. I like those words. Magic Man. Death of the Bachelor is a remarkably nuanced affair. It's hard not to break out in goosebumps and marvel at the moving songwriting.
All right, you know me. I'm gonna love the negativity here.
Oh, you're gonna love the negativity.
Conversely, The Guardian called the album hollow and shapeless.
Yo.
Damn. Kind of like some of those fucking rigatoni noodles you're just throwing at the wall to see what sticks. Motherfucker.
You can't say shit like that when I have a mouthful of Coke Zero Sugar, yeah. Zero Caffeine.
We don't need a fucking Jones soda even on this episode. Also stating that Uri affects a Vegas croon, indicating a desire to reinvent himself as an edgy Michael Bublé.
Yeah.
People do just be saying shit. And how it's unlikely to pay off. Damn. Oof. God damn, they did not hold back. Q wrote, it's a confusing affair where foolishly tries to croon like Frank Sinatra on the title track and never quite nails down whatever the big idea was supposed to be. Still, there are moments to cherish. That's good. I mean, that kind of came around. Absolute punk writer Aaron Mook. What a fucking mook. Scored the album a 6 out of 10, noting it's been a while since I've heard an album that's so divisive in its quality, so manic on one end, and so lazy on the other. God damn. Ooh. Yeah, they're just not holding back. Consequence of Sound panned the songs Don't Threaten Me With a Good Time and Crazy Equals Genius, stating that Don't Threaten Me With a Good Time lazily squashes together a sample of the B-52's Rock Lobster with lackluster lyrics out of tune with their surroundings, and that Crazy Equals Genius only serves a reminder of how many days have gone by and stand in the way of any musical progress. Fuck me.
Jesus.
I want to go ahead. I just want to reemphasize, only serves a reminder of how many days have gone by and stand in the way of any musical progress.
Yeah, that is fucking wild.
That's gnarly. Like, that is a fucking hit of all hits right there. Like, yeah, I think if you were to say that to any artist, they would just retire. Like, oh my God. I don't even feel that way about this album.
God, yeah, that's not...
Oof.
God.
Like,
the only... really quick, the only... Yeah, I don't know that we should dwell on that very much longer. That is nuclear. That's
yes.
Insane.
Yeah.
I don't think I'm looking it up. The only thing on MTV is the preview for the album from September 2015, so I don't think our boy James was up on this one.
Well, there's no Montgomery.
Nope, and there's no in the review score section here, there's no MTV either, so we're missing James.
Damn it.
Aggregate scores. Any Decent Music, 5.9 out of 10. These are the aggregators. Metacritic was, as we know, a 69. Nice. Out of 10, 100. All Music gave it a 4.5 out of 5 stars. Alternative Press gave it a 4 out of 5 stars. The AV Club gave it a B. DIY gave it a 4 out of 5 stars. Entertainment Weekly gave it a B-. The Guardian gave it a 2 out of 5 stars.
Damn.
Pop Matters gave it a 7 out of 10. Q gave it 2 out of 5 stars. Rolling Stone gave it 3 out of 5 stars. And USA Today gave it 2.5 out of 4 stars.
And that fucking writer of Consequence of Sound gave it a negative 10.
Right.
Like, yeah. My God.
Golly.
Holy shit.
Golly.
Like, I'm going to the... You know, like, I get it. I get the sentiment about Rock Lobster and Don't Threaten Me With a Good Time. 100%. Crazy Equals Genius is going to be one of those songs that I mentioned earlier. I'm not going to say on which side of the spectrum it's going to be.
Mm-hmm.
But, again, even I don't have this level of disdain for this album. Like, as a whole. You know, because, like, let's scroll down. Don't Threaten Me With a Good Time and Crazy Equals Genius are 4 songs apart, and I guess there's some peaks and valleys if I looked at that, like distance. But to say overall musical progress, like, that's fucked, because I will say, as a person with, you know, maybe C or B level of feelings about this album, like, I still do think that there is progress made. I'm not going to say it's the best of progress, but it is still, he's still, like, turning a wheel, What a fucking savage thing to say.
I actually opened that review, so this last paragraph. That said, those looking to relive the Panic glory days will find some loud, fun times with Death of a Bachelor. Even the final track holds some charm once you break through the pseudo-glam veneer. The artwork is a serious hit, is a serious hint. Death may be messy, but it's not necessarily the end, just another explosive event. Yuri's latest paints a vivid portrait about what the land of sunshine can do to a man who refused to slam the goddamn door, instead proclaiming, it's better now, I'm in a good place. They also list there the essential tracks that they pulled from this album are Victorious, Death of a Bachelor, and The Good, the Bad, and the Dirty. So those are like their top tracks for this. David Buchanan's top tracks for Death of a Bachelor. We'll see if they match ours. Who knows?
Yeah, I feel like... I don't even know if that was as savage as that line alone. Like,
I think in a bubble, it sounds probably worse than it is.
Probably.
It was nominated in 2017 for Best Rock Album at the Grammys. And then in 2018, it was nominated for Top Rock Album for the Billboard Music Awards. It did not win either.
It's weird that just that one Canadian producer has his own award show.
Right, yeah. Oh, fucking Billboard, yeah. This would be a good time. We'll come back to the personnel and the track listing. Because now feels like a good time to talk about the performance.
The commercial performance.
Let's just read these out. Australian albums, Aria, peaked at 3. Ooh. Austrian albums, O3 Austria, peaked at 15. The ultra pop Flanders in Belgium, peaked at 14. Meanwhile, ultra pop Wallonia, and also in Belgium, peaked at 88. So Wallonia did not like this album as much as Flanders did.
No shit.
Wow.
Wow. It's because Wallonia doesn't have a field, I bet.
Yeah, probably. Canadian album, Canadian producer Billboard says it's his number 3. No, I'm kidding. The Billboard charts in Canada said it was peaked at number 3. The Dutch album top 100 peaked at 14. Finnish albums. The Suomen Virallinen Lista. It's back. It's been a while.
That's good.
Peaked at 22. The Offiziell top 100 in Germany peaked at 23. The Maas in Hungary. It's MAHAZASZ, which stands for, it doesn't say, peaked at 25. The Irish Irma peaked at number 4. Femi, the Italian album, peaked at 66. The RMNZ, New Zealand album, peaked at 4.
No,
Norwegian albums, Nurmans. The VG Lista in Norway peaked at 20. The OCC in Scotland peaked at 4. The Tromuske.
Yep. I love it.
Spanish albums peaked at 46. The
get
the Sviriktoplistan in Sweden peaked at 27. The Svajsa Hit Parade Switzerland peaked at 41. The Svajsa Hit Parade is back. The Swiss that's Svajsa Hit Parade. The OCC UK album peaked at number 4. And here is why Brendan continued to do this going forward.
Yes.
The US Billboard 200, the US Top Rock Albums Billboard, and the US Top Alternative Albums Billboard all peaked at number 1.
That's crazy. Like, to get
that is crazy.
I think alternative I could see. You know, like,
yeah,
that one I would give it, but the overall Billboard and
overall
definitely
Billboard and Top Rock
like is fucking blowing my mind.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because I think if you were to have this discussion with people, is Panic at the Disco rock? Mm-hmm. Like, I think even I would probably say no.
No, I think it's rock. There's a rock is a very broad category, right? It's very broad, and then there are subdivisions of what rock is,
like
in
alternative.
I think that overall, I think that Panic at the Disco is at this point is still rock. I think that's just me.
I think there's more here that I could see as rock.
Yeah, I think it's more pop. I think I think Fever was rock.
Fever was rock. Pretty Odd, most Pretty certainly odd, not rock.
Not rock.
Vices was
Vices
probably
rock.
More rock,
More rock.
Too Weird, no.
Too Weird, not really. I think this is rock.
I can probably agree with that, but I just like I almost feel bad for other rock albums that might have came out that like people would be like, this is fucking rock. Well, I would listen to this and be like, yeah, this seems very alternative to me, which it rightfully got that. Like, that's great, but I don't know. I guess but I'd have to rock. See what, like, guitars, what the fuck else came out in 2016. Drums. I have no idea.
Yeah. It's guitars, it's drums, it's
there's
rock.
Enough stadium shit. Like,
yeah, I mean, it's rock. It's a type of rock, ergo,
it's rock. It's rock.
I wanna rock. Rock! And then really quickly, the U.S. vinyl albums charts peaked at number 3, which is cool, too. I have that vinyl. Yeah. That was actually, Death of a Bachelor is actually the first Panic vinyl I ever owned.
Nice.
I have all of them. I have all 7 of them at this point, but that was the first one I ever had. This album charted in 4 different years, right?
Which is
so
crazy.
2016, it's crazy. 2016, when it came out, the year-end charts, it peaked in at the end of year. Its position was 78 in the ARIA in Australia. Its last final position was 48 OCC. The US Billboard 200, its last position was 23, which is wild for a album that
peaked at one. Yeah,
that peaked at one. Well, no, but like, in, like, I'm saying this in a good way. And also, US Top Rock Albums, its final position was 3. So that's crazy. This album came out in January of 2016. For it to only drop to 23 over the course of literally 12 months of other music coming out is pretty crazy. And for it to only drop to 3 on the rock charts after 12 months of being out is also crazy. And I think a lot of that is due to probably Victorious, but yeah.
Well, time. Let me provide just a little bit of context for what the year 2016 was on the Billboard charts.
Oh, God.
If I can get back in that. Got it.
Listen. 2016 was the year Harambe died and the year Donald Trump was elected president. I don't like to remember 2016 a lot.
Ooh. Well, then let me... Okay. Adele had the number one record that year. And interestingly okay. enough, my gosh. Yeah. Yeah. Also, Suicide Squad came out. So Panic of the Disco was still on that one. And I think that one was at 21. Mm. So you had like a year stack.
21 Pilots was on that one too. Heathens.
Yeah.
Heathens was on that.
Crazy. So 2016 was
that was the year. That was the year that he legit just said, I'm going to do. That was the year he just said, I'm just going to do Queen now. Literally, I'm just going to do Queen. That was that year. Wasn't it?
Yep. Yep.
Because the Suicide Squad track was Bohemian Rhapsody.
Yes. Not a good version of it, but yes.
So in 2017, it was still on the charts. At the end of 2017, it was 49 for the U.S. Billboard 200, which is still insane. And it was still number 6 for rock albums. Mm-hmm. 2018, it got knocked out of the top 100 on the U.S. Billboard 200. It was 106. But it was still top 13. It was number 13 on the rock albums. And then 2019, it finally dropped off the top 100 or the top 200, but it was still 38 on the U.S. top rock albums for Billboard. So for like the fourth year, it was charting. It was still in the top 40 on the rock charts.
Yeah.
Let me, which is crazy.
Let me meander here again on this point. Like, I find it crazy that it's not on the alternative charts, but it's still thriving on the rock. Which makes me think, and like you said, like Victorious is the reason for that. But like to think that Victorious is the one alone that held this on for 4 years straight, I guess when we get there to like see what like Emperor's New Clothes is, like is that probably rock and less alternative? But and I can't imagine like most people are holding on for Don't Threaten Me With a Good Time, like no disrespect to that song, but like it's just crazy to me that it didn't keep up with all 3 and only kept up with 2 and then fell to 1. Like that is kind of what baffles me. And then to even like to spiral away from that thought to another one that I had earlier about House of Memories, I'm surprised that this hasn't had a resurgence in, you know, like 2022 or 2023 when that song was fucking popping off on TikTok, and they even released like a single of the TikTok version of that song, like that slowed down clip that, you know, they just applied it to the whole song. So it's kind of, it's weird to me that it's just only in rock that carried it all the way to the end.
Yeah. It's also worth noting here too that, so 25 by Adele was number one for the first 4 weeks of the year that year.
Sure.
Black Star by David Bowie was number one for a week. That was wild because he released it and then he died like 2 days later. So people were really heavy listening to that one. Death of a Bachelor was on top for a week, and then 25 came back, surged back. You had a week of Rihanna, you had a week of Future, and then you had 2 weeks of Adele, and then you had the 1975, and then it kind of like went on. Views by Drake was on top for a lot of weeks.
Yeah. You know.
It's wild to me that Lemonade was only number one for a week.
I wonder if that's only because it was on Tidal. Like, it was seemingly only released on Tidal.
Maybe. That might be why. Let's see. Yeah, Views by Drake was on top for a while. Yeah, Suicide Squad, the album, was on top for 2 weeks. And then it's kind of just like a series of one-week wins to the end.
Sure.
You got some Frank Ocean. You got some Shawn Mendes. You got some... A Seat at the Table by Solange was number one for a week there.
So interesting.
Two Knowles's on the charts there. Kings of Leon, Tribe Called Quest was on there. Yeah, and J. Cole, For Your Eyes Only, was the final number one album of the year that year. So lots of stuff. Look that up if you want to. We should do that more often. We haven't really done that before, but
sure. Hell, it's been a while since we've had a season or a new season.
That's true. The Denmark IFPI Danmark, their certifications, it is gold. 10,000 certified units in sales. The Canada, Music Canada certifications, 80,000 units sold, made it platinum. The BPI in the United Kingdom, 300,000 certified units sold, made it platinum in the United Kingdom. In the United States, the RIAA, fuck the RIAA.
It's in your contract.
It is in my contract. Sold 2 million units, making it double platinum in America.
God damn.
It got really big. That's so. If you have any questions about why Brendan Urie decided to continue with this vibe, here's why.
Yeah. God damn. I don't know if any of us would after this. My gosh.
Yeah. All right. That was the Billboard 200. It debuted at number one. It debuted at number one on the Billboard 200 with 190,000 album equivalent units, which was Panic at the Disco's best sales week ever at that point for an album. Sold 169,000
nice.
Album sales.
Mega noise.
It fell to number five in its second week. It was the 12th best-selling album of 2016 with 506,000 copies sold, which also made it the second best-selling rock album of 2016.
Interesting.
Including streams and track sales, the album has totaled 845,000 units in the United States in 2016. Also certified double platinum by the Recording Industry Association of America. Fuck the Recording Industry Association of America. For combined sales and album equivalent units, over 2 million units in the United States.
Hell yeah. Crazy. Big album.
Big album.
Coming in
11
big.
Tracks. You wanna go through these tracks real quick?
Yeah. Let's see. We're starting out with Victorious. Mm-hmm. Number two.
Don't threaten me with a good time. We alternate these, you That's absolute right. hey, fuck. You know,
I was just good. I was just in a groove. Number three.
I didn't even finish saying number two.
Finish saying
number two. Don't threaten me with a good time.
Number three.
I'm straight up not having right now.
Number three is Hallelujah. We all know how to say it.
Yep. Number four is Emperor's New Clothes.
Number five is Death of a Bachelor.
Number six is Crazy Equals. Genius.
Very good. Very well put together. Number seven is L.A. Devotee.
Number eight is Golden Days.
Number nine is The Good, The Bad, and The Dirty.
Number 10 is House of Memories.
Number 11 is Impossible Year. Which I feel like we're all having 3 months and 19 days into the year, but it's fine. I love it.
And then we've got our personnel.
Personnel.
This comes from the album booklet. Brendan Urie is Panic at the Disco. Of course, vocals, guitar, bass, keyboard, drums, except for Hallelujah, background vocals on Hallelujah, creative and
pretentious
art direction.
Pretentious. Not only is he vocals, he's the background vocals as well.
The background vocals. We've got Rob Mathis for the horn arrangement and the conductor, Andy Sneetzer, tenor saxophone, Dave Mann, tenor saxophone, Aaron Hick, alto saxophone, Dave Reichenberg, baritone saxophone, Mike Davis, tenor trombone, Randy Andos, bass trombone, Jeff Kiewit, trumpet, Tony Cadleck, trumpet on Death of a Bachelor, Crazy Eagle Genius, LA Devotee, Golden Days, and Impossible Year, and the flugelhorn.
Flugelhorn.
Flugelhorn. That's Dylan fun. Schwab, trumpet on Victorious, The Good, The Bad, and The Dirty, and House of Memories. White C, who is a person named Morgan Kibbe, who's an American singer, songwriter, record producer, and former actress based in Los Angeles, best known as a member and collaborator of the French electronic group M83.
Is that a gang?
Front woman. It's a French electronic group, Adam, as I just said, and front woman of the Romanovs. But White C is what she currently goes by or went by at the time. Did background vocals on Victorious, Hallelujah, additional production on LA Devotee and House of Memories. Mark Stepbro, drums on Hallelujah. Nicole Gucci, creative and art direction.
Gucci, maybe.
Zach Cloud Hall, cover photography. Shervin Lane's portrait photography. The visual strategist. All right. Layout. Jake Sinclair, producer on all tracks. Background vocals on Victorious and Hallelujah. J.R. Rotem, producer on Don't Threaten Me With a Good Time. Imad Royal, producer on Hallelujah. Susie Shin, additional production on Victorious, Death of a Bachelor, Crazy Equals Genius, LA Devotee, Golden Days, and The Good, The Bad, and The Dirty. Engineer, background vocals on Victorious, Death of a Bachelor, Crazy Equals Genius, LA Devotee, Golden Days, and The Good, The Bad, and The Dirty.
Claudius, Mietendorfer.
Mixing on all songs except Hallelujah. Michael Brower, mixing on Hallelujah. Pete Lehman, mastering on all songs except Hallelujah. And Joe Laporta, mastering on Hallelujah. Hallelujah got some really, a lot of specific attention, didn't it?
Yeah, a lot of attention for a song that's like not the most popular track on here. Yeah. I'm assuming. Like, I would, you know, if I had to look at Victorious and think that that's it. Yeah. Crazy. There's one.
Equals genius.
I quit.
you can't
just say shit. You know, you can't just say shit.
That's right.
On this podcast,
I
Adam.
I have learned that I can. People have told me. One major name that I'm noting an absence of.
Which is?
Butch Walker.
Butch Walker. Butch. He did mention that So remember, he said Nightbirds described as a song a little too early Butch Walker, but definitely not as good.
So. Yeah, but I'm thinking, though, that that's like him trying to emulate Butch Walker, not the fact
yeah,
that
no,
was
no,
a,
exactly.
Yeah,
no, exactly. No. I don't think it was so, like a disconnect or anything.
I feel personally affronted looking at some of the writers, and by that I mean quantity of, and there's no Butch Walker, which I guess quality of, I could see why.
Okay.
So, interesting.
Well, I mean, Butch does come back.
Yeah.
On the 7th album.
And I think to have one listener get a little excited, I do see Mike Viola's name here as a writer. But we're not going to get into all of these right now.
Yeah,
so.
We'll get into those when we talk about each individual song. Oh, Lolo wrote for... Oh, interesting. Okay. We'll talk about that later. Yeah, we're here. We did it. Do you have anything else to say about Death of a Bachelor as a whole before we move on to next week?
I'm excited.
Actually, one last thing. Do you want to know what the set list for the Death of a Bachelor tour was?
Abso-fucking-lutely.
Well, this set list is representative of the show on February 25th, 2017 in Philadelphia, and is not representative of all concerts for the duration of the tour, but this does track with what I remember. Number one, Don't Threaten Me With a Good Time, LA Devotee, Ready to Go, Get Me Out Me Mind, Golden Days, Vegas Lights, The Only Difference Between Martyrdom and Suicide is Press Coverage, Kamisato, But It's Better If You Do, so that was the melody there.
Yep.
Hallelujah, Nine in the Afternoon, surprising again, Miss Jackson, This is Gospel, Death of a Bachelor, The Ballad of Mona Lisa, Moving Out, Anthony's Song by Billy Joel, cover there, Emperor's New Clothes, Nicotine, Crazy Equals Genius, Let's Kill Tonight, 24K Magic, slash,
that's so weird,
Bitch Better Have My Money,
so weird,
first by Bruno Mars, second by Rihanna, covers there, Girls, Girls, Boys, his cover of Bohemian Rhapsody, and then for the encore, I Write Since Not Tragedies, and Victorious.
I will have to look up this probably horribly recorded 24 Karat Magic and Bitch Better Have My Money compilation. Like, that sounds interesting to me as a person who has never heard that.
Yeah.
And then,
from what I remember, it was interesting.
I can imagine. And then to show my hand when we finally do have the episode dedicated to the live album, that medley, you know, the I Write Sins medley is so fucking good. It's so fun to listen to. And then I am a big, big fan of that Moving Out cover.
Yeah,
like
that's a good cover.
That is almost one that I would stack against, you know, Billy Joel's original, because damn, is it pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
And then I know that I said the Bohemian Rhapsody is not good. I will go ahead and fix that now and say the version he performs live separately from the Suicide Squad soundtrack is good.
Yes.
Okay. Like, I think that version they put on that album is fucking terrible and disrespectful and makes me think that you shouldn't just be saying words like things between Sinatra and Queen. For that to be the only one that's like actually on an album that was, you know, properly mixed, so on and so forth, and not just on a live album. I think it living there fucking sucks.
Yeah. Also, Mr. Wives and Saint Motel opened for them that tour, and I love both of those bands.
That's fun.
Them too. Yeah.
So, I think I mentioned, like, we saw fucking, who was the Shut Up and Dance people? Like, that was the one that we had seen them on with their first tour that we went to.
Walk the Moon?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was fun.
Walkman is also good. But yeah, with that, I think that's about it. That's all I got.
What a time.
What a time. Season 5.
What a time we're moving into.
Season 5 is live. And you know how I feel now that we have finally gotten to season 5? You know how I feel?
Great. Stressed. Concerned.
I feel victorious, which is what we're going to talk about next week.
You know what? Don't threaten me with a good time.
Which we're going to talk about in 2 weeks. And hallelujah to that, which is what we're going to talk about in 3 weeks.
This emperor needs some new fucking clothes.
No more. We're done.
You're killing me. I think we could call it a proper death of a bachelor. Not really, because I'm married, so it didn't work.
Yeah.
So I guess you could say that's the crazy part that equals genius.
Sing. Adam. Love you, bye.
I'm
ending this before you have a chance to do more. Bye. Fuck. Bye. Love you, bye. Fuck. I don't love LA enough to be a devotee.